holy shit, that's the trash can man. Pardon my language. Oh my god, there
that's,
I go.
That's two swears, Lisa. I told you swear more than anybody else on the
Did
show.
Did I have two? What was the first? Yeah,
there was another one about 4 minutes ago. Anyway, I'm writing them down.
Oh my gosh, was there?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Nice cover.
Oh my gosh, well done.
Jinkies.
No, I spend my day around
Who,
a 3
me?
And a half year old.
Yeah, I know. Let it out.
God.
I can fix it in editing and the chat room doesn't mind.
Mid last week, somebody tweeted at Steven saying M-O-O-N spells something or other, and I was just shaking my head because I was in the middle of reading the book at that point, and I was like, he is not going to get this, but I get that tweet.
Wait a minute, someone tweeted at Stephen King?
No, at her husband, Stephen.
No, my Stephen.
Oh, okay, just making sure, because I'm like, if Stephen King doesn't get it at this point.
I'm sure he's written a lot of books.
I'm sure he gets it like 20 times a day by people who are like, I bet I'm the first person who's ever tweeted that at him.
And he dumped ice over his head from a bucket today. That's what I saw. I feared for his health, actually.
M-O-O-N spells ice.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sure. Anyway, also, if anybody who watched Lost, the guys who did Lost basically admitted that The Stand is the most influential book in the making of that show, which is why there are good and evil representatives and a Randall Flagg sort of like character and all that. It's all there's a great Entertainment Weekly article where the producers of Lost go visit Stephen King and talk to him about how much they are stealing his stuff.
As Brian K. Vaughan talked about whether or not The Stand heavily influenced Why the Last Man, because there's a bunch of set pieces throughout that entire series about life after the great male die-off that read to me as something that could be lifted from The Stand.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're so similar.
Yeah, and he was a producer on Lost.
On Lost, yes.
Yeah, so I seriously think that book's reverberate. I think The Stand has reverberated through a lot of contemporary writers' fantasy scenarios.
On the subject of Brian K. Vaughan, it may be relevant to note that he is the creator of the television show Under the Dome, based on Stephen King's novel.
See? So. Yeah. It's all connected. Look at you with the baseball knowledge there.
Oh, don't tell Stephen.
No, promise.
My Stephen, not Stephen King. You can tell Stephen King. That's okay. Fine.
I'm gonna.
National or American League?
Well, we don't know. The Royals are in the American League. The Monarchs could be in any league. They could be in the Federal League,
Jason.
For all we know. I don't know where the fictional Monarchs are, what league they're in. They're in the Federal League. The Federal League in this universe was the other league that succeeded.
Stay tuned for Jason Snell's baseball fanfic.
That he won my heart forever when I saw it, when they include the detail that he reads 3 or 4 books simultaneously and just picks them up and puts them down as the mood strikes him, because I've had that habit ever since I was a kid, and I'm like, see, we're meant to be.
Yeah, I've got my bedroom book and my living room book and my other side of the living room book.
Uh-huh. Yeah, your commuting book, your just in case of emergency break glass in the car book, and no one else has car books that they keep just in case?
Oh, I keep Hamlet, or when I had a car, I kept Hamlet in my car, just in case, you never know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I actually used to work with a guy who apparently was up for that part. He was actually deaf, but they decided to go a different direction.
A different way.
And and then they had, and apparently the deaf community was kind of outraged because he's not actually signing.
Oh,
what?
My God, kidding me. Oh, no. I'm going to have to go back and check the Rob Lowe autobiography. I'm not kidding. I'm going to have to check the Rob Lowe autobiography on this. Okay. I have it on my Kindle. Hold on.
You do that, Lisa.
Seems like it'd be real easy to get that right.
They didn't bother to teach him actual ASL. They just had him sort of like kind of, you know,
make gesture. Jesus, that's awful.
Yep. Yeah, that's really bad.
That's like the Nelson Mandela funeral.
I think the one thing that kind of hurt Flagg as a character for me, he was just terrifying the first time I read it, or first couple times. But then after I saw the miniseries, I had an actor to put in like in my head. And I don't think that it would have mattered who it was. It's just the fact that I actually have somebody's face to associate with that character kind of ruins it for me, because nobody can smile with the same amount of evil glee that this character in this book does. I don't think anybody could actually pull it off. So
I bet Willem Dafoe could.
Nope.
Oh yeah.
No.
Oh yeah.
Definitely not.
John Malkovich.
Nope.
Yeah, I don't know. Malkovich has that.
You're not picking winners for me here, personally.
he kind of, in the book, he kind of has like a faceless menace, like almost like that you don't want to picture what his face looks like because it's like an unknowable thing. Yeah. Like, it's, I mean, they get a description like he looks like everybody, but not really.
Like your brain instinctively just throws up a shield.
His face is always in shadow.
Not even like not in a silly way, but like in a it's the reason we're not really talking about the miniseries, but it's one of the things that books can do better than visual medium is that you can get away with something like that, whereas if you put it up on a screen, you have to make a decision, and some people aren't gonna like
let's have it literally look like a big hand coming out of the sky. How about that? That might be a problem.
And you know, speaking of Lost, is there any possible way Larry didn't inspire Charlie?
Oh, dude. Yeah.
Rock star.
Huh. Yeah.
Oh, what a coincidence. They were both my least favorite characters.
and Charlie ends up with taking care of Claire and all. Oh, yeah, you're right. You're totally right. Mm-hmm. No, it's, I mean, and they, to be fair, they said so from the beginning that the single book that influenced them the most in plotting Lost was the Stand. And you can see it. You can totally see it.
Horses die a lot in the future. Like, I've read a lot of books. I've read a lot of books in apocalypses or the future where horses are just rendered extinct by one means or another.
Unless the planet is ruled by apes, because apes always love riding horses.
They do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we were saying that Randall Flagg didn't actually kill everybody. It was science. But there, you can definitely see a bit of the, you know, the hand of God or the hand of evil in this virus, in that it didn't kill the wild creatures and it did kill the domesticated ones.
Yeah.
Also, Stephen King is clearly not a cat person. The cats all lived. Well, you know, you read this book in the 2000s, and there's so many things. I was thinking, one, King couldn't write this book now because he's an older man, and I don't think he'd be able to tap into so much of the raw. Like, there's a sort of heedless momentum through this whole story where people who lose children just, oh, well, my kid died. I'm off on a road trip with Larry Underwood, because that's how it all shakes out. And I think as somebody in his 60s now, he'd probably have a much different take on what it would be like to lose your entire family without warning. And like, I think he's in such a different place where he is emotionally and artistically, he couldn't write this today. But the other thing that always stands out for me is I find myself wondering what Captain Trips would be like in a world with the internet.
We'd get the word out.
He couldn't write that either.
Yeah. No. And I don't know. And here's the question is do you think anybody could plausibly write that? Or do you think the Stand is kind of a relic of a less connected world? Like, it's the only way it could have happened was in a very specific time and place.
I think you just have more panic.
Yeah, it could be written by someone who is familiar with the modern. It would play out a little bit differently, but you could definitely write. In fact, I think it might be more interesting because there are so many other things you can do with the interconnectedness and communication. Yeah. And of course, like, the first thing they're doing in Boulder is trying to get the power back on, but the first thing they'd be doing in Vegas is trying to get the internet back working.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I mean, we need to connect to the porn servers now.
Yeah, I mean, there's something in that comes out in the complete and uncut version that I noticed the first time I read it, when Fran sees the broadcast of delirious soldiers executing people on the air, and she's like, oh, this has to be a movie, this can't be real. And I remember reading that, you know, for the first time and thinking, oh, this is kind of a nod to television and cable TV and modern and the 24-hour news cycle, because that was what people were wringing their hands about in the 1990s was, oh my God, how can we fulfill a 24-hour news cycle? But, you know, I now wonder if the way the first third of the book would play out would be via internet message postings and other, you know, epistolary things where people are texting deliriously or Facebook
hashtag apocalypse.
Facebook friend counts go up
Captain
and down.
Trips. Or trying to discuss where everyone is going to meet, and all those meeting places end up being disasters or traps for the military and just disinformation. Like, it would be a different book, but disaster works in almost any scenario, I feel like.
Yeah.
If you're going to kill everybody, something interesting is going to happen no matter how they're talking to each other. But and once everyone is gone, it kind of feels the same, because if you can't even get the electricity back on, it doesn't really matter that you all had cell phones.
Well, I mean, this is in The Walking Dead, the way that Robert Kirkman does it is that he has his main character wake up after it happened.
Yeah.
After it's over, right? And so he just wakes up and is like, oh, geez. Everybody's gone and there are zombies. Yeah. And you just jump right over to that part, because
that's Day of the Triffids starts that way too. Yeah. And I quite like that.
I feel like I know how it would play out, because I've seen people on the parts of the internet I go to freaking out about Ebola today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good old Captain Ebola.
I was just reminded of what I think is a huge plot hole at the end of the movie that's always kind of bugged me. That Fran's child is going to live because she's passed on an immunity to it. But up until that moment in the book, there's nothing indicating any sort of genetic immunity to
lots of people's disease. Kids died.
That's why they were doubtful whether they would live or not.
You know, they don't have scientists there, so you don't know if the explanation is that there's actually some other germ that outcompetes it in your system, and that
or
other germ
is
now been passed.
Yeah. Well, if there was any genetic component to surviving it, then there should have been at least two people who were related at some point surviving. And
But King they're just guessing there's a genetic component. Yeah. They're just saying, like, oh, well, there must be a genetic component, but it could have just as easily been, again, there's some other germ that is now passed amongst all the survivors because they're in close contact with each other, or it could just be dumb luck because...
As
we established when we talked about The Last of Us, science and medicine in the after the apocalypse, not very reliable.
No, it's not good. You know,
fair enough. I'll buy that.
No, actually, when I read that Fran and Stu are planning on, like, delivering kid number two all by themselves, like up in Maine or whatever, I'm like, oh my god, that's a bad idea. I could care less about the Hanryune discussion they have about whether or not humanity will correct its mistakes. All I can think is, there is nothing that is going to test your relationship like a completely unmedicated home birth administered by a complete medical non-professional in the middle of nowhere with nobody around to help you
after the apocalypse.
Tell me about it.
But thematically what he's trying to do is show that is there hope for humanity? Maybe not.
I think they could have had that conversation when Fran was in the hospital with actual medical professionals looking her over.
The redispersal is good, though, because everyone gathers in Colorado and everyone gathers in Nevada, but then they redisperse. Because you can't, like, that whole, it's like, we needed to gather for this battle, and then redispersing seems like that's what we should do. Like, it's a big country. Let's
everybody
all
gets
out.
Their own county.
Somebody go start a farm or something.
Yeah.
Oh God, no! Mm-hmm. I think you'd be pulling me out of Boulder, kicking or Las Vegas, kicking and screaming. No, did you guys never wonder where you'd end up? Did you always think like, well,
it would not be like, Boulder or Las Vegas? I'll tell you that.
The Smithsonian last.
Yeah. Let's how about the Library of Congress? That place is nice.
Yeah.
Well, so 90. It's what 99.2%?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I believe
0.8?
So.
Yeah, I mean, we're still talking about that's a lot of people in the US. I mean, those cities are gonna have people
and
in them and they're gonna have guns and they're gonna try to kill you.
And then don't forget like 10% of them died through other weird, freaky, horrible ways, you know. That's what that whole chapter was about.
It's like
chapter 38.
Just because you survived, you're not equipped to actually survive.
No,
like you still have
to
find food and water.
Yeah, there's still like 2 million people in the U.S.
And we don't know what happened to the other countries. We know they sent off carriers, but the other countries could have handled it much better.
Or might even have a genetic. That's actually one of those interesting bits in what was the book? The Dog Stars, I think, John. Lisa, did you read that too? Were you on that one?
I don't think you were.
Another apocalypse one, but there's at the end of that book, there's some planes flying overhead, and everybody's like, "Whoa, what's that?" And it's never really explained, but it's really and there's some voices on the radio that they think might be from these jets that are flying at 30,000 feet, and it's a really nice touch in that book because it's suggesting, you know, even more so, like you really don't know what happened anywhere else, and there could be. Other places where they've got this under control.
Oh, it's like the 28 days later, 28 weeks later thing where they're not sure if just England has been infected by the zombie plague or if it's the rest of the country.
And The Walking Dead is sort of like that too, to a certain degree.
Captain Trips is airborne, and so it spreads so quickly in the United States, and they're intentionally trying to infect other countries that you pretty much have to assume the rest of the world is screwed because there's no containment protocol for something that spreads as easily as this.
Especially if it's airborne, there's air travel right there, so you could easily do a map where it's all bing,
game over. I've also read the Drowned Cities is about an apocalypse in DC, and that's really depressing. Don't go.
It's horribly well. That's because it's also about child soldiers.
Yes,
and,
it is.
And
we did a whole episode about that. People can
go
back
and listen.
That
one. Yeah. I read it, but
you
want to
be bummed out by
Paolo
Bacigalupi. Yeah.
Is he finally going to write a sequel to that? Because
I think he is writing a third book in the Shipbreaker world.
I love that world, man. But that's it. Also makes me appreciate air travel, but.
That was actually the last line of the book, which I just read part of, is actually one of my, it's so hokey, but it's one of my favorite last lines, because if you're going to go for a hokey last line, I think that one works really well. That's, we didn't talk about that. Maybe we'll talk about it in Dark Tower if we ever do a series in that, but like having it be circular at the end and sort of having the ominous ending, again, cliche, yeah. Like, oh, but guess what? The evil has not been defeated or whatever, but it's done in an interesting way. It's done really well. I even like the illustration that's in the version of the book that we have, Jason, in the last chapter with the guy with the natives and everything.
Yeah,
it's just, it's creepy. It's ominous. It's, I like it. I'm a sucker for corny last lines.
They did not. They definitely did not habla fucking Espanol. Yeah. What did that mean?
I will say I would like this book more if it skipped all of the community organization section. I love parts 1 and 2 and 4.
You want to be a hermit.
Yeah.
Well, shut up. My boyfriend, Glenn Bateman, is never wrong.
I'm minutes from meetings.
No, I tell you, that's supposed to point out that I think it's a way of showing that Franny's got some innate writerly talent because she's coming from a place that Harold can never access.
Right. And it's like the bitterness of, like, you know, the person. It's the Mozart Salieri type thing. Yeah. Why does you know, that person doesn't deserve the writing talent she has? I'm the real writer. Why can't I care about this stuff? Why, it's my life's work. Mm. Why can't I be better? And that's, you know, maybe if you're going to map it onto Stephen King, it's like he probably sees people who seem to have a more nonchalant writing talent than he has, despite the fact that he sells more books.
Well, because he works like a mofo. Holy cow. I love On Writing precisely for that reason, because he's like, yeah, it's basically work. It's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. So much work.
On Writing is my favorite Stephen King book, but it feels like cheating to say that.
Yeah, it is. It is.
It's my Reddit.
Shame on you.
Oh, it's great.
I'll put it on the list.
It is great.
This dude knows the subject.
Yeah, the guy. Plus, it's a great sort of harrowing story about him getting hit by the car and what happens to him.
He can't help telling a story in his book. I know. Better. That's his thing. He's a great storyteller. Like, if the written word had not been invented, he would still be a great storyteller, just sitting around the fire telling everybody these stories.
Yep. Yeah. It's Uncle Stevie's crazy stories again.
It's funny. We were talking about the apocalypse, and there's a helicopter like flying around outside with a big spotlight pointing down and some weird lights off to the side. I'm like, I don't know what's going on here, but that's not normal.
Canada,
is up, Canada. We're on to you.
Canada is already undergoing as a country. The apocalypse. Yeah.
I even did a search on Twitter to be like, you know, helicopter hashtag yag. Yeah. Nothing.
They're just looking for you.
Sometimes it's just a helicopter. It doesn't have to mean anything. Sometimes a helicopter is just a helicopter.
Sometimes. But if you've seen Goodfellas enough times, you start to get suspicious.
Yeah, right. I love that movie so much.
Oh,
so,
have any of you ever heard of the song Down to the Nightclub by Tower of Power? That's the song that Trash Can Man is riffing on when he goes around singing Cibola.
Cibola.
Cibola. Bumpty bumpty bump. And it's presented in the book like a song everybody's heard of.
Yes, and I wondered if he had made it up or if it was a thing.
It apparently
should have come with
thing.
Like it should have come with a little floppy vinyl insert, like a Billy and the Boingers in the Bloom County book.
It's from
I tell you that every time I see Cibola as a place name, and that happens a lot out in the West, because there's a Cibola Road in San Diego, there's a San Cibola in New Mexico. Like, I always think of the Trash Can Man.
Man really loved that song from the Tower of Power album released in 1972, by the way.
Yeah.
He had an older brother. Like, it's still kind of...
He should have been singing Tainted Love. This is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Get your time frames right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Billy and Boinger's reference. That's really good. I have a digitized version of those songs.
You make me stink, but I love you.
Yeah.
To the solo.
Yeah. I don't think I ever took the record out of the book because I didn't want to.
I was so disappointed when I did.
Yeah.
I occasionally listen to the A side. Not You Stink, But I Love You, but I'm a Boinger.
I'm a Boinger, sure.
I'm a Boinger, Oh, boy.
Good times. All right. Good luck to all those being stalked by helicopters.
Is that your new catchphrase? I like it.
That is. I'm workshopping it, Monty. We'll see.
I'll keep an eye on your Twitter stream, Erica.
Keep watching the skies and watch out for helicopters. That's something like that.
Yeah, if you don't hear from me again, just assume it was some sort of helicopter related nefarious
I'm going to assume that you're bodily assumed into heaven by a helicopter, heavencopter, something like
heavencopter,
that.
Heavencopter, yep.
That's probably what happened.